This is the Epic New Podcast. Two idiots and a list. Where you're going to get two idiots and a list. And now, coming to you live from Circle Avenue Studios, your hosts, Nick Fasolo and Kirik McMillan.
Hello and welcome to another episode of A Couple of Brain Surgeons and Some Shit They Wrote Down.
I like the new title.
I thought it worked well, too.
Gotta workshop it a little bit.
If you want to help us grow, please subscribe, rate, and add a comment on whatever you're using to hear us now. I believe Spotify is adding the option to do so for podcasts as well, so if you use Spotify, jump on that. I am here, as always, with my co-host, Nick Fasolo.
Season's greetings, everybody. We're doing this the day before New Year's Eve, so getting it right in right under the wire. Today we're doing a huge band from the 80s to the 90s and even until today, U2.
Yeah, this request came from Michael N. in the Boston area, who also added some extremely complimentary comments to our Facebook page. We very much appreciate you listening, and you could do us a favor and maybe share this episode on whatever social media you prefer.
Yeah, and I promise to stop shitting on Boston for this episode, okay? You have to, it's not, don't take it personally. It's like the big, it's like the middle brother Chicago beating up on the little brother Boston.
U2 was started by Larry Mullen, the drummer, in 1976. He was 14 when he posted a note on the school bulletin board looking for band members. Among a handful of others that responded, Paul Hewson, who you all know as Bono, and David Evans, who you know as The Edge, replied, along with Adam Clayton.
What's going on in English schools, or even these English or Irish schools? Like, how many fucking bands have been started by just like a bunch of bandmates and schoolmates, right?
Tacking something to the wall.
The Beatles, The Police,
right?
Genesis.
Something in the water. Dick Evans was also a part of the original lineup, and it sounded like he was kind of booted after a couple of years.
Well, it's The Edge's brother, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he started a band called The Virgin Prunes. Who actually produced a number of albums. They were U2's opening act starting out. The original band name was Feedback, and then it changed to The Hype. And these guys started as a cover band for punk acts like The Clash, The Buzzcocks, and The Sex Pistols.
Yeah, I think I heard my brother just fall off of his couch. You reference U2 as a punk band.
I tried hard to listen for punk in their stuff. You could possibly have the argument that some of their early stuff was in that avenue, but that feels a little bit of a stretch.
It's post-punk, but their talents were, you know, destined them for way beyond punk.
Yeah,
you know, for a band that has often said is like, we fucking sucked. Like, they couldn't play their instruments for the first 6 months.
Right.
Like, seriously, could not play their own instruments. Mm-hmm. Except maybe Larry was okay at the drums, but, you know, you got The Edge there who could not even barely tune his guitar.
No.
And, you know, just to stick with it for that long and just to make something out of it, like, that's a lot of drive.
Yeah.
So there was a vision there early on.
Mm-hmm. Bono ended up being called Bono by school friends, which appears to be an adaptation of the Latin word bonavox, which means good voice.
That wasn't that fitting.
He's been knighted in Britain. He's received similar titles in France and Portugal. Mm-hmm. These guys are successful. One estimate I saw said they've sold between 150 and 170 million albums worldwide.
Oh, yeah. And their tours are nearly the highest grossing tours every time they go out.
Mm-hmm.
Going back from the Joshua Tree tour in 87, they played 110 dates, made about $100 million. Zoo TV, which was their biggest one, really, played 157 dates over 2 years.
That's a lot.
Right? $151 million. Then it goes up. We'll skip over to like they get to like the 360 tour. They played 110 dates. They made $735 million on that tour.
That's insane.
Over nine tours, over about like $2.5 billion.
That's insane. It's crazy.
And a lot of it is spent on the show.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Now, you've seen these guys more than once.
Through the extraordinary generosity of a person I know, I have been extremely lucky to be in some excellent seats for their last five or six shows. Like, we're talking, like, they have this area called the Red Zone. And so U2 only plays Stadia. And the last time they played around here was the, you know, the couple of, they played United Center, but they also played Soldier Field. And, like, I have a video on my phone. Like, I'm so close to Bono, I could trip him off the stage.
You're shooting up his pants leg with, yeah, with your camera?
So that type of access, you know, through this extraordinary generosity, I would never be able to afford those tickets. And, you know, I'm forever grateful for that. But, like, to look back from that stage setting where I'm sitting or standing and seeing, like, Soldier Field packed with 85,000 people.
Right.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And to watch these guys perform. Like, Bono commands all of them, like all the way back to the very back last row where your season tickets were. So you can scratch God's toe. Like, all those guys, they're all jumping up and down. It's incredible. Like, it's really quite a spectacle. So, yeah, I've seen these guys more than I've seen Def Leppard.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, nine times, I think.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
They have won 22 Grammys. That's more than any other band. And Rolling Stone has them at number 22 on the list of greatest artists of all time. Care to take a shot at who rounds out the top three of that list?
Oh, the top three?
Uh-huh.
I got to figure the Beatles are there.
Yep.
Got to figure Elvis.
Well done.
Maybe Hendrix.
Bob Dylan.
Dylan.
But two out of three is pretty good.
I remember being a fan of these guys back in 83 when I saw their very first video on New Year's Day. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Big hair for a lead singer. Like, Bono had huge hair.
He did.
But I've always tracked their career. And, like, when Joshua Tree came out, I was like, man, I'm all the way in. Because I'm a very visual guy. Obviously, I watched a ton of MTV throughout my life. And their videos have just been stylistically cool.
Yeah.
They had an image.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew, you know, what he was doing with that image. But we'll get into, you know,
sure,
how those things backfire, too.
Before the Reddit guys jump down your throat, a note I saw said that Gloria was their first video on MTV.
Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't even know how to get to Reddit.
Their first three albums, Boy, October, and War, were produced by Steve Lillywhite, who also produced a ton of, just an unbelievable number of albums for huge names, Peter Gabriel, Dave Matthews, The Stones, Morrissey, Talking Heads, Pretenders, Thompson Twins. After that, I was like, I'm tired of writing down bands. It's just, it's huge. This guy was unbelievably successful as a producer. The model from the cover of the album Boy was also the model for the album War, but his expression was changed to one of anger or fear.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also the same kid on their Greatest Hits albums, and he's wearing a military helmet. Joshua Tree went platinum in 48 hours in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
48 hours.
Just a mega crazy album.
Yeah. And yet, With or Without You and Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For are the only songs to hit number one, mm-hmm, in the U.S.
Yeah. Back to back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That album made them icons. Like, took them out of rock and roll stars. Hey, they did a good job at Live Aid. Cool. Took them into the stratosphere of the icon status.
Right.
Like, you're talking Michael Jackson, Madonna, U2.
Right.
You know, they're right there. As a matter of fact, it was Rolling Stone dubbed them as the band of the decade in 1985.
That's right.
Right? The great pastime of American media, right? We love to build our heroes out of the clay beneath our feet, and we love to smash them in part. And that's exactly what happened with Joshua Tree.
Right.
They toured on that fucking thing for 2 years, became mega superstars. They knew it. They kind of felt it. And they're like, you know what? We're going to do another, Rattle and Hum. Right after that. And in an interview that I saw with Adam, the bassist, he kind of said, it's like, yeah, we were, you know, we didn't mean to put ourselves on the same pedestal as B.B. King and Bob Dylan, but that's how it came off, and that's how the people received it, and I can't fault them for that. We fucked that one up, and he's like, we'll never do that again. There was such a whipsawed backlash against them almost immediately. Like, yeah, you guys are absolutely superstars. What's this Angel in Harlem shit? Right. You know, what are we doing? Fuck you. What do you think? You're as good as Bob Dylan. And that wasn't the point, but it spun out of control for them.
Yeah.
And in the last show on the last part of that tour that Bono had said, he's like, we're going to go away for a while. And I think he said, he's like, we have to redream the whole thing up again. That's an artist talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how you know he's an artist, because any other band could have said, fuck it, sold $25 million to Joshua Tree. People hated Rattle and Hum, and it still did well.
Yeah.
Still got a number one out of it, right? We'll just keep on doing the same shit.
Bill Maher once said of Gwyneth Paltrow that people have kind of created a cottage industry out of hating her, right? It seems like we're going to hate on these guys because... well, maybe because we can, maybe because they're so successful, maybe because of what they sing about or how they sing about it or the philanthropy that they do, which seems like really shitty reasons to hate somebody. But I just that when I think of U2, for some reason, Mar saying that stuck in my head.
Sure.
And Rattle and Hum did not help that cause.
So are we just going to dive in? I don't have to tell you this. The list that I have, I just finished it, and I'm not happy with it already because I've got a list of probably 15 songs, and I'm just like, I just don't know which to pick. So my honorable mention is Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me. Love that tune.
It's a great tune.
And the video is fucking awesome too, where they're cartoonized into the Batman cartoon.
I have not seen that video.
So fucking cool. That's the thing. I think that's the thing about U2. Like, I like Joe Elliott because I'm like, oh, would it be awesome to be him? U2 just fucking hits every... they're so goddamn cool. It's just like, I think that all of their visuals that they use, the shit that they do on stage, the shit that they bring into their live shows from Zoo TV all the way to the one that the Innocence and Experience, everything is just like, man, that is fucking cool. To do that as a major stadium rock show, like... most guys will just like pop. Like the Foo Fighters put on a very good show in a stadium. But it's like big video screens of the band that you can see up close. And, you know, when he broke his leg, he had that rock chair, which was awesome.
Right. Yeah.
But like they like engage with the scenery and stuff like that. It's just like they, it's like Muse. You get a lot of what you know, whatever you pay for that ticket, you get it back. You can tell that they're not just socking that money away. They're putting it into the production of that show.
Right.
So awesome.
All right. That brings me to my honorable mention. And I'm going to the album How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, and I'm going with Vertigo. I really like the grind of this song. The Edge chunks the chords during the first part of the verses and then goes into kind of a classic Edge guitar picking move in the second part of the verse. And then they go into the chorus and they kind of repeat it. I think this song would be a ton of fun to see live. Like, I just imagine the crowd bouncing up and down, you know, in rhythm to the song. And I used to really hate the opening. He doesn't say uno, he says unos, which means some. So he basically says some, two, three, 14 in Spanish, which I thought, you know, don't yank my dick. And then in researching this, Bono said there might have been some alcohol involved. So they pulled me back, you know, from the precipice of really hating that opening. But the rest of the song just kicks.
Yeah, it's a good song. And the bouncing up and down in concerts, like, you know, when you've been to a U2 show, because about 45 minutes to an hour of it is all just like bouncing up and down.
Yeah, the last part of the song, it sounds like he's going into the normal chorus, but instead he sings, "Your love is teaching me how to kneel." Let's go down and all I know is that you give me something. And I just thought it was really cool how he tied that line in to add some additional lyricism without kind of overburdening the song or going into a, you know, part C or part D or something else in the song. So I'm a fan of that. That's a good tune.
It's a cool song.
All right, what you got for number five?
So my number five comes off of Joshua Tree, and it's so hard to pick a song off of Joshua Tree, like, which is one is better than the other, but I just pulled the ripcord. I'm like, you know what, fuck it, I'm just going to put it on the list. You know, they'll do. So my number five song is I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. Such a cool way to, like, intro a song, but, and I'm not prone to do this, but if you listen to, like, Larry's drums, drummers are good for, like, fills, you know, you kind of listen for that. That's part of, like, how they get the show off. I really haven't heard too many drummers do kick fills. Like, he fills with his kick drum,
mm-hmm.
and it's fucking awesome. So when I had somebody point that out to me, I'm like, you can't listen to the song again without hearing it. It's, like, so fucking cool. It's like, and so you can hear it. He doesn't do it all the time, but when he does it, it's like it's perfectly punctuated. Like, he does not get, in my view, he doesn't get enough credit for being a solid, solid drummer. Like, this guy is really great.
Oh, I think he's the unsung kind of hero of this band.
Yeah.
Because it sure as hell isn't that bass player. Oh, my God.
He just walks around with a gigantic smile on his face because he's like, every note I play is another 50 grand in my bank.
That's right. All right, that brings us to my number five. And I'm going to Zaropa, and the song is Lemon. This is a song about preserving memories through film. A man makes a picture, a moving picture, through the light projected, he can see himself up close. I think there's a really cool groove on this with the reverb that they have on the keys. And Bono is singing the verses in falsetto. And when he kicks back into his normal register, there's something really satisfying about it.
What I like about Lemon is that I remember in the Pop Mart tour, they had this gigantic lemon. It must have been 50 foot tall. Like, it was huge at the end of the stage. And they're like, we're looking at it, constantly looking at it, like, what the fuck is with the lemon? And like one of their what do you call it?
Stagehands?
When they come back.
Oh, encore.
One of their encores, like they came out of the lemon.
Yeah. So I read something about that tour that indicated that was a difficult tour for them.
Not a great sound for them.
Difficult tour for them.
They rushed the end of the album.
They
didn't rehearse for the stage, and it showed.
Well, they talked about that lemon, and apparently there were some mechanical issues with the thing, where they would get stuck in there. So they would have
their Spinal Tap moment.
Yeah. And I don't know if they had their instruments and they were like, was it like all echoey?
Right.
Oh, man. Well, what do you got for what do you got for number four?
Okay, so my number four is going back to the Unforgettable Fire, which interestingly, the title for that album came from when they were visiting Chicago and they had gone to a museum exhibit. And I don't know if it was an exhibit about the Chicago Fire, but the title of the exhibit was The Unforgettable Fire. They left Chicago and did their tour or whatever, and they came back and, you know, they needed a title for their album, and I think they hit upon The Unforgettable Fire. So anyhow, that's, you know, it's Slane Castle on the album cover. By the way, if you're looking to see U2 live and you can't get to a show, their best seat, like they've always done an excellent job of putting out DVDs of their concert experiences. They've always been on the cutting edge of this shit. U2 Goes Home live at Slane Castle. It's fucking awesome. I mean, there must be 300,000 people up there.
Wow.
It's incredible. And again, he just commands all of them. It's really awesome. But off the Unforgettable Fire is a song called Bad.
If I could throw this lifeless lifeline to the
I love this song because, you know, with The Edge, many people don't give him credit for being a good guitarist. And my understanding of his music is less is more, for sure.
For sure.
He plays around with sound and echo effects. Like, his echo effect is so signature now is that you can't buy an echo box or a mod box and not have a dotted eighth note setting to Edge's setting.
Right.
Like, that's how much he's impacted, you know, the way people like to play guitar. Like, his setting is already... like standard, it's standard on a thing, but this song in particular is just him playing like two notes,
yeah,
and it's just an echoey effect in the background. It's Bono's falsetto. It's his lyrics are so just his lyrics in a lot of these songs like Bad or One or With or Without You. They're so relatable to a multitude of different
right.
human experiences.
Right. That song is all about heroin.
Yeah,
it's about heroin addiction.
Yeah.
Presumably why it's called Bad.
Yeah.
But the recession that hit Ireland and the rest of the world in mm-hmm. the early 80s led to a jump in heroin addiction in Dublin.
Yeah.
And so that's why he lost some folks apparently that were close to him. He has tied the loss to a variety of different people. But I'm a big fan of this song. This was one of the ones I wrestled with in terms of whether or not to drop it on my list as well. I think the drums are great in this song. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that, you know, there's a continuous build in the song of sound and volume.
No one will be surprised if you're a fan of this show. I was the one, you know, I was a kid sitting in my basement in the summer of 1985 watching U2 perform, you know, in Live Aid. And this song, they had three songs for that set. They only got to play two because this song went on for like 12 minutes. As it turns out, like, part of that song, the reason why it went so long is because he jumped into the crowd to pull a girl out of the stands and he started dancing with him. And that to the mainstream media, that was like, oh, he's a human too. And so let's elevate these guys. And like U2 is now our favorite. They're like, they're
right.
the darlings of Live Aid. Later on, 20 years later or so, that young woman had given an interview. They found her somehow and they give, she gave an interview. She's like, I was being crushed to death up against the gate, and I was pointing at Bono, and he saw me. And I watched that video on YouTube, and you can see he's not going out there because there's the girl that I'm going to dance with. He's going, like, he tried to get security, he couldn't get him, and he popped over the fence and yanked her out. It's pretty stunning. Like,
right.
And she said, he saved my life. And like, their dancing together was like, he's like, it's going to be, everything's going to be fine. You're safe now.
It wasn't like Springsteen pulling Courtney Cox out of the audience.
No. Brian De Palma directed that video.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
Oh, man. All right. So my number four is Beautiful Day.
My number two.
All right.
But go ahead.
Okay. Great poppy beat that just kicks heavy at the choruses. They intentionally wrote the song to sound like they did earlier in their career. And I think it finds that.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to, you know, the earlier days, there's actually a song called Always. That's a B-side track that it's a really good song. It sounds like, okay, this is what Beautiful Day turned into.
Yeah.
Because it's a very similar type of thing.
Bono said it's a song about losing a lot, but finding happiness in what you have left.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his lines in it is, what you don't have, you don't need it now.
It's the greatest. That's
a great message.
One of the greatest fucking lines. I just love that part of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you see it performed live, whether you do it on YouTube or whatever, it's like it's really a powerful moment. Like, you know, he's like saying, it's like, what you don't have, you don't need now. What you don't have. Such a great song. That's why it's my number two. It's also part of my number two is because the video is fucking awesome. It's them walking around Charles de Gaulle Airport and just being U2. But like, they're U2 as worldwide famous people, and people are kind of like gawking at them.
Right.
The great thing about U2 is like, they play to that. They're playful with it. They're not Michael Jackson about it. Of course, nobody was really Michael Jackson because he was just a different type of superstar. But they deal with that same type of fame, and they're kind of playful with it. Now, I don't know how much of that was really staged, or whether he takes the bite of the apple from the girl in the terminal or whatever. But one of the coolest parts about it is that when they're on the runway, they have their setup on the runway, and they're 747s taking off and landing at, like, at the apex of the chorus. They're probably CGI'd in, although it was 2002 or whatever it was. It looked good at that point. It's always cool to see that. It's like really fucking cool. Just cool. This is a great song.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that tune. I think it's just got a great drive to it.
Great build.
Like, yeah. All right, what's your number three?
So my three had held the top spot for a long time. It fell down because, like, Beautiful Day is up there. I always go listen to that song. And this song, to me, is kind of emblematic of the whole experience of listening to Achtung Baby. One of my very favorite albums of all time. And the track is So Cruel. Killer groove, the bassist puts down a sweet groove, and then Larry kicks in with it's a really slow swing, and the lyrics are just talking about, like, you know, this whole album it's like an album of, like, betrayal and redemption. He's talking to a lover, he's talking to, like, you know, somebody he's in a relationship with, and it's a tit-for-tat relationship, and he's like, one of his lyrics is like, I'm only hanging on to watch you go down. my love. It's really kind of like a, I'm waiting around for you to get fucked up.
I want to see this ship sink.
Well, yeah,
but I want front row seats to it.
Well, that's kind of like the song One. Also, it's not a love song,
right?
It's not. No. There are a lot of different, it's not hateful messages. It's just kind of like them wrestling with, love and relationships type of thing.
Right. All right. My number three is actually also off of How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. And it is The City of Blinding Lights. A lot of meanings in this song. It was originally written from a memory of Bono going to London as a teenager. And then some lines in the song are also an ode to his wife, who he's still married to, and this was a woman that he grew up with, or at least went to like middle school or high school with.
Yeah.
They played a show in New York City shortly after 9/11, and he was playing... Or they were playing Where the Streets Have No Name. And while he was singing the song, he looked into the crowd and he could see a large number of people in the audience were crying. And so he yelled into the microphone, "You look beautiful tonight." And that's where the chorus really came from.
Yeah.
There's something really admirable about how they write. You know, when Van Halen wrote Beautiful Girls...
Mm-hmm.
You knew what you were getting.
Yeah, of course.
There wasn't much mystery to it,
yeah.
And it probably took them, 10 to 15 minutes to write the lyrics to that song.
Yeah.
You know, it's good for what it is. These guys, they take their concept. It just sounds like a very fluid thing that, eventually they take that concept and move it around and shape it, and it eventually solidifies and gets kind of molded into place over time.
Yeah.
So this music is not something that is, you certainly can't call it banal. It has depth. It has history. It has... We're going to start like this, and we're going to continue to mold this over until we get it where we want it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of notes out there in the history that I looked at that indicated Bono is really unsatisfied with some of the stuff that they've put out. Some of the songs that are iconic songs, he wasn't happy with the result, felt like he was getting pressured either by the band or by production management. There's something about this song that I like the ooh-oohs that lead up to, "You look so beautiful tonight."
Mm-hmm.
There's a really odd bridge in the middle that doesn't quite fit the style of the song, but I can get over it. It's not unpleasant. It's just weird.
Well, as young men, they were all, three of them, Edge, Bono, and Larry, were very much Christian.
Oh, yes.
Like,
religious overtones in these songs are strong.
To a point where Adam, Adam was kind of like the troublemaker. He got kicked out of a couple schools and stuff like that. And he was in this band with three guys who would regularly go to Bible studies and things like that. And they weren't fucking around. They were Christians.
Yeah, they were serious.
He's like, "You know what? I don't think I'm right for this band." And they're like, "Let's take a step back."
Right.
And so that's kind of when they receded from the Christianity thing. Because they were well on their way to being like a Christian pop band.
Right.
Right. And so Adam was kind of pulled them from that precipice, but it's still there.
Oh, sure. Well, they close every concert with 40, and that is an adaptation of Psalm 40 from the Bible.
Yes.
You don't feel like you're getting preached to, at least not about Christianity. You might be getting preached to about other things by you too, which is an unfortunate side effect of the philanthropy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I'm not going to go off on a rant here, but I just think that their part of Christianity that they choose to like expose their the community to is more of kind of like the Jesus was a good guy.
Right.
This is what he wanted.
Be nice to each other.
Yeah, be cool to each other. And that's pretty much the message. And that's really what you get, you know, and I don't mind that at all.
No,
and
I'm not
a particularly religious person, but I don't mind that at all because, you know, he's a groovy cat.
Sure.
I'll dig it.
All right. What's your fantasy concert lineup?
Oh, well, I've got one for you.
Oh, I am looking forward to this.
I've got one for you. Okay. Do you want to go first? Because I've got a whole explanation here.
Sure. I don't know that mine's that deep. So I kind of thought about this, like, who are bands that are sort of like U2, but, you know, because U2 is kind of unique. They've got kind of a unique sound. And I ended up going with two other bands that have a unique sound. And one of those is The Cure.
Mm.
By the way, folks, if you are not familiar with Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me by The Cure, mm-hmm. it's a fantastic album. Really, really top-notch album. And then, I also want to see them with New Order.
Fuck you! Get the fuck out of here!
Do you have New Order?
That's who I've got on my list! Go ahead!
I think that New Order would fit really well.
Right?
Yeah.
Good. I just want to hear Substance.
It doesn't have to be a full hour and a half.
Yeah, man. That's what I have. I've got New Order opening up. I'm like, oh, that's perfect. It fits perfectly for them.
Yeah.
That's a good lineup. I like that. Yeah. Cure, U2, New Order. That's a good lineup. We got New Order coming on. And then here, my second band. And this is a very specific reason why. If you listen to this band's first album, which was produced in 1989, called Liquidizer. Jesus Jones' Liquidizer sounds like the studio recordings of the Achtung Sessions.
See that tie.
They said, we're going to fucking Berlin because Brian Eno, who is our guy, our producer, he worked with Bowie. Bowie needed to get the fuck out too when he was reimagining Ziggy Stardust into his new guy. They went to Berlin and he's like, we're going to fucking Berlin. Right?
Yep.
There, we're going to get a different perspective. We're getting away from the white flags and the cowboy hats. We're going to do something different. And so at that point, you have bands, English bands like the Stone Roses, doing like dance music, dance rock, and he wanted to get to a place where you can do dance rock, and Jesus Jones was also floating around there at the same time, and they must have heard it. Zoo TV comes from the station of Berlin where they were, their studio was near. So there's the Berlin Metro, and so Berlin Metro is numbered like U1, U2, U3 train numbers,
uh-huh.
And on the U2 line, there's Zoo. There's a larger name for it. There's a German name for it, but it's basically people call it Zoo Station, and that's where their recording studio was. And two stops down is the Opera House, and two stops down the other way is the Nightlife District of Berlin. And in the lyrics for Zoo Station, they kind of make mention of that. It's like we're coming from both worlds, like the high art and the
party life.
The party, like, and we're going to fuse this together. And it's like, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
The design of that album is awesome.
That's cool. What do you have for number two?
That was a lot. I just had to get that out. Just like, it's brilliance. Number two is My Beautiful Day.
Ah, that's right.
But I can put one in there if you'll allow me. I've got a lot in there. But no, go ahead.
My number two, I'm going with a classic, and I'm going with Pride in the Name of Love. Early morning, April 4th, shut rings out in the Memphis sky. Free at last, they took your life. They could not take your
banger tune.
You can't beat the message here. The song is quite obviously about Martin Luther King Jr. Bono acknowledged the lyrical error of Early Morning, April 4, since King was murdered in the evening. It was originally written, however, about Reagan's pride of American military might.
Mm-hmm.
They eventually restructured it to, you know, what we know today. This is number 388 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs of All Time, placing it, I believe, about 100 points higher on the list than I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner.
Oof.
Listen to our previous episode if you want some laughs.
Yeah, right.
Chrissy Hynde is the backing vocalist on this song. At the time, she was married to Jim Kerr from The Simple Minds. Mm-hmm. So the credit isn't written to Chrissy Hynde. It's written to Christine Kerr.
She's the one that told Bono, it's like, you're never going to make art until you start singing lyrics that you believe in. Pride, I think, was the beginning of that arc.
I mean, obviously, when they were doing stuff off of War and October and Boy, they had songs with some depth and some meaning. This one really kind of combined not only good lyrics and a good message, but also good music.
Yeah.
And then they kind of hit the trifecta on this. All right. Then that brings us to your number one. What you got?
So my number one was really not... that was really never in question. It was always a number one. It was just whether or not I was sharing a spot with another song. The song is Stuck in a Moment. This song is written as a conversation between himself and his good friend Michael Hutchence. This was a song he wrote for him posthumously. It's just a beautiful song. Everything about it, I think, is beautiful. I think the last part of the song when Bono and Edge kind of share parts is really moving. It's really touching, and it's a great song. I love it.
That's a great tune.
Yeah.
I also had that as a contender for my list. Great song.
Yeah. Their version that they did on David Letterman's show, just the two of them sitting in the chairs, stunning.
Hmm.
It's stunning.
I'll have to pull that up.
Yeah, it's really great. And if the night runs over, and if the days won't last, and if your way should falter along that stony path, it's just a moment.
My number one, I'm going all the way back to War for this one, and it's New Year's Day. Say when did that album come out? 83, 84, somewhere in that neighborhood?
Earlier, 83.
83-ish. I think I got it, you know, within a year or two, probably. I don't know for sure, but I know that my parents plopped me on a train from Chicago to Cleveland, where my grandfather lived. My grandmother had already passed away. We talked in the last episode about my memories of Boston's third stage, where I'd gotten this, the first exposure to real stereo sound. This was me riding on the train, and I had a handful of cassettes with me, and one of them was U2's War. And I really dug into the album. I liked it a lot. It had just a raw sound, and it's that early raw sound of U2 that I knew first. Edge isn't using the same reverb effect that he used throughout so many of his other songs. It's like I said, it was raw. He chunks the guitar quite a bit and drops a pretty simple but fairly decent guitar solo in the song. The bass line is simple, as expected, but it's not. He's not just repeating the same notes, you know, on a repetitive line. It's a little more varied. Bono's really high and clean, and he's up in the mix. The song is about Poland's solidarity movement. Now, when you and I were kids, that was all kind of unraveling, coming together. And I remember walking to grade school and seeing the Solidarnos, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that right, posters in windows in suburban Chicago.
Sure.
You know, that was a labor movement that got the world's attention and the support of the United States. And eventually got Lech Walesa voted president. That's really nothing to do with that. But anyhow, it's...
we have a big Polish, you know, there's more Polish people here in Chicago than there are in Warsaw.
Yes. Yeah, that's so, quite the populace.
Speaking to the
here.
Crowd.
Right, right. So I think it's a really cool tune. His line, "Oh, maybe the time is right, maybe tonight." He sings that, it's crisp. And I like this song a lot.
They play it at every show. I think there's one of like four or five songs they always play at shows because that's what people want to see. And it's amazing to see, especially at that line, the house lights go up and the whole fucking place is just
rocking.
You were to open up the doors of Soldier Field and let everybody run out on the streets, like they were ready for revolution, right? They're ready for it.
Right, right. All right, what's your most hated?
It was a hard thing for me to come up with a most hated, but I will go and you know, kick a man while he's down on the Rattle and Hum album. Desire just never really did it for me. I don't dig it. That and the Helter Skelter remix.
Right.
You know, when he said, you know, like, you know, this is a song Charles Manson stole from the Beatles and was stealing it back. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that was the height of the pomposity that they were talking about. It's like, you're done. We're done with this act. We're done.
Yeah. Yeah. As I was listening to their catalog, I was like, boy, I'm going to have a hard time with this. And then I got to this song. And it was off of Rattle and Hum.
Yeah.
And it's fucking Angel of Harlem.
Oh,
yeah. It's fucking awful. There's something about the melody combined with the horns that just irks me. The way he sings Angel is kind of whiny, you know, swollen like a bee sting. It just doesn't work for me.
That and When Love Came to Town with BB King.
Yeah, with BB King.
Like, BB's just being a nice guy. He's like, I'll play with you guys. But
yeah.
Come on.
Like, I'm with you there, too. And that was also, so I had those two on the list. And that was going to be my follow, you know, once I made my decision, it was going to be one of those two. But yeah, it was Angel of Harlem. All right, what's your coolest 4 seconds?
I got a lot.
Okay.
I got a lot.
Kick it off.
All right, so before we get into that, my wife, who's also a huge U2 fan, she wanted to play along at home. So I'll just give you her, I'll run down her top five. In number five spot, she had Sweetest Thing. Number four, she had Elevation. Number three was With or Without You. Number two is One. And number one is Stuck in a Moment. With the same one as I, it's no wonder I married this woman. Huh? All right, man. What do you got? I love Numb. Yeah, from Zeropa. It's the follow-up to Octung Baby.
Okay.
The video is just Edge's face, you know, tight on Edge's face, and it's just this real mechanical song. There's nothing really, like, I like it. It's funny. It was cool. Like, for them to do that, it's like, just I'm just going to be here. And people are going to be, you know, the girls are sticking their tongue in my ear and, like, running their hands over. It's a cool video.
This is your coolest 4 seconds?
Yeah, man. The opening part of Numb.
Cool.
I like.
Cool. In the beginning of Seconds off of War, they repeat the initial riff like it was an accident. And then, so they start the riff, they stop, they restart it, and then go on. And I just thought that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. It always just struck me as kind of a unique thing to do on a tune.
Their last album, Experience, Songs from Experience 2017, they did a track called Get Out of Your Own Way. It's a really awesome track. It's about America kind of like dealing with, you know, what you were dealing with in 2017. The chorus part of it where, you know, Bono is talking about, you know, how everything's going to be okay, just need to get out of your own way, and Edge has kind of got that falsetto behind him. That always works for me. I don't know what it is about those two voices paired together where the Edge is always doing the falsetto in the background, and, you know, Bono is very earnestly going after those lyrics. Like, it just works, and that song is a good example of that in the chorus.
Cool. The vocals halfway through Bad, when he starts cranking out, I'm wide awake. I thought that was a good clip.
Yeah. Yeah, like a lot of their lyrics are really cool. Like you got to dig through them, but they're like that Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me. That the one of the lyrics that stuck out is, and it's really a cool part of the song, it's like they want you to be Jesus, they'll get down on one knee, but they'll want their money back if you're alive at 33. They want you to be Jesus, they'll go down on one knee, but they want their money back if you're alive.
That's a cool lyric. I like that. Yeah. The intro to Zoo Station, which you mentioned earlier off of Octon Baby, has a really crunchy, distorted guitar.
Great. The intro drums on Sunday, Bloody Sunday.
Iconic.
And now they just play that song with Bono and Larry with a a snare drum around his neck, where they just walk around.
Oh, like a marching soldier.
Yeah. That's all they, and he just pops away at that. It's really awesome.
That's cool. The intro to Some Days Are Better Than Others. I'm going to have to give some rare bass kudos to Adam Clayton.
Okay.
Who is quite possibly the most boring bass player to walk the earth. But that's a cool tune, and I like his bass line in that intro.
Yeah. I like the part in Even Better Than the Real Thing when he... that video is also really groundbreaking. For its time, what's really cool, they put it on a lipstick camera and they just circulated the band. It was really neat to look. But the part of that song when he's like talking about it, he's like, I'm going to blow right through you like a breeze. I always thought, man, what a cool way to say things. He's a really good lyricist, man. He's really good. I really enjoy his, like, I think that's why they're right up there at the top.
Sure.
The lyrics are always there.
Sisters of Mercy. Do you want more?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I haven't listened to Octung Baby probably in a good, maybe, like, the whole thing top to bottom for maybe a couple of years. And I was going through and I just couldn't stop listening to it. It's like, man, every fucking song is just... One banger after the other.
Yeah, and I, you know, initially when we talked about doing U2, and U2 has been on our list for a while, we did get the request, and it was sort of like, well, shit, why don't we do U2? My memory of them was that sort of annoyed, and a lot of that probably had to do with overexposure, but the sort of annoyed thought or, you know, thinking of U2 like, you know, I've had enough. I kind of, this rekindled some respect for me for them that I might not have realized I had or maybe didn't have before by listening to some of this stuff. And the fact that they were able to pull me in on songs from, you know, well after their start in the early 80s, that I like. All right. Who's the MVP?
I hesitate to give it to Bono only.
I thought about that as well. You know, you could tie it to, obviously all of them had a hand in writing the music, right?
Every one of them is listed as writers.
And the lyrics are really strong. You know, mm-hmm. The storyline behind these songs is strong. And so what I did was I looked at it as like, what drives these guys? Because after you do Joshua Tree and you're worth, well, I don't know how much they were worth after that, 10, 20 million, 30 million a piece. I have no idea.
They achieved what they wanted to be, which is the biggest band in the world.
Yeah.
That's what they said.
And so they keep driving, right? And they keep driving. Mm-hmm. And what's driving them isn't the cash. Now, I'm sure they like to make it, but what's driving them is the shit that they believe in and the shit they're trying to fix. So I'm actually giving the MVP to all things bad in the world, because that's the shit that's driving them forward. Hunger in Africa or famine in Africa. you know, water issues, you know, human rights issues, all these things.
Very much involved with a lot of that stuff.
The
Good Friday Accords.
Yeah.
In large part done, you know, with his aid and kind of publicity, using his platform.
And his wife is a big, big activist, too. She had like a big campaign against some nuclear energy facilities in Britain. And, you know, they're both quite active.
You know, Panama Papers aside, because, you know, there's, you run a fucking business that's worth billions of dollars. You're not watching every penny that goes in and out that door. And I don't know the whole story of that. No. I just know he got tangled up in that mess. However, the balance of the work that they do, very much, you know, in the Christian tradition of, like, community and service and faith. And I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So you can, like, are we going to give the MVP to the Christianity of it all?
No.
Okay. That's fine. Maybe you and I are saying the same thing in a different way.
I think so. All right, how do you rank these guys? Skill, what are you giving them?
I will give them a 4, flat 4. Edge is really good. Larry's really good.
I put them at a 3.2 because I agree Larry is good, and obviously Bono has his skill set.
Sure.
The Edge, I think, is highly overrated. I really do. I used to play in a band with a guy who was a really skilled guitarist, and he was also a huge U2 fan.
Yeah.
And he ranked The Edge as, like, top 5 all time. The rest of the band had to pick themselves off the floor from laughing.
Yeah, I wouldn't put him there. I think that his innovation is where he really makes his bones.
Yeah, he figured out how to make the delay affect a signature sound.
And I think that's a big thing.
It's not a small thing. Yeah. It also wasn't like he designed the effect. He simply extended the delay. So it wasn't like, you know, like the guy from Boston creating the Rockman processing technology. He basically turned his delay up.
I mean, it's fair enough. And, you know, he's not a terribly technical guitarist, but he's...
He fills a notch.
Yeah.
And that bass player isn't worth a pile of bricks.
The smile on his face is worth the money just to watch him just strut around. Because he really has no personality whatsoever except for just a smiling rich guy.
And he can't.
Who's just...
Yeah, I'm just going to play 16th notes of the same note over and over again. I mean, With or Without You has the same bass line throughout the entire song.
Yeah, so, you know, hey, he got lucky. He got lucky.
Catalog, I gave him a 4.8. I thought they had a pretty good diversity in their catalog, a lot of depth. They had, 14 studio albums? You know,
I don't want you to get hit by Reddit.
Yeah, that's what I've written down here, so we'll see. It may not be 100% accurate, but I think that's what it is.
I would give them a 4.82. You can get deep, probably 30 deep on these guys.
Oh, yeah. I had quite a list of potentials.
Yeah.
Their image... I remember we used to talk about the Bono turd dance.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And that...
That was coming from the Joshua Tree days, the videos that they used to put together.
Yeah, that looked like he had a load in his underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And he... I never thought these guys were all that cool. Now, I've never seen them live, so they're getting hit on that from me. I put them at a flat 4.
Well, anything changes when you see them perform live. It just does for me.
Sure.
So I have him up there at 4.8 because Bono is a fucking awesome front man. He is awesome. He is like...
Commands the audience.
He's just great. It's fucking awesome. One of the greatest like intros to a concert as they played Where the Streets Have No Names, which is a long plodding chords of the organ and stuff like that. The band then comes out and takes its places on the stage and Edge starts playing the guitar chords. And then it starts to kick up, and then Bono just runs around the fucking stage. And like, they have this big loop around the stage. There's an inner side, and then there's outer side. And he hits the mark every single time. It's just like, this, what a way to start a show. It's like fucking, it's just like, and it's just a roar of people. And like, he just basks in all of it. It's just like, you can tell these guys have been at it for 45 years, and they love every single moment they're on stage, including Adam.
Yep. Well, good for him. All right, that wraps this episode. You'll be hearing from us again here in about a month. In the new year.
Yeah, 2022, second year.
God willing, it's better than the last couple of years.
How could it be any worse?
That's right. All right, folks, thanks for listening to us.
Be well.